Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., the man who is always, always, always glad to have you join us. You know, one of the focuses of our program is encouraging the celebration of diversity. We try to build the individual, the family as well. We try to build the community. And you all, we have an outstanding guest who's going to help us do all of that today. She is Ambassador Harriet Lee Elam Thomas. She has a book entitled Diversifying Diplomacy, My Journey from Roxbury to Dakar. And believe me, her story is an outstanding one. Ambassador Elam Thomas, how are you doing?
I am very well and delighted to be on the planet Earth.
It's a great place to be. And you know what? Speaking of planet Earth, I'd rather hang out here than go to Mars any day.
I would agree. We know the parameters, and no matter how challenging they might be, we still can navigate them, can't we?
That's right. For sure. And you, speaking of navigating, you have been doing some navigating and and some outstanding navigating and throughout the world. I mean, some experiences and places that you have been that some of us have never even heard of. Ambassador Elam Thomas, if you would, especially because this is so appropriate, because in your book, Diversifying Diplomacy, you talk about it, your childhood. Start us there at the beginning and give us a bit of an insight into what life was like for the little Elam girl.
Well, at that time, I didn't think it was fun, but now I feel terribly blessed with having had siblings who were 17, 18, 19 years older than I. They've all just passed away, but when I was growing up, I was the youngest of the five siblings I mentioned. My parents were from the South. I know many people have read Isabella Wilkerson's book, Now that just went from my head. It's the story of the Great Migration.
Oh, yeah.
And my parents were part and parcel of that. My mother is from Aiken, South Carolina. My father is from Chase City, Virginia. Now, don't look for Chase City on the map because we couldn't.
Okay.
But it's near Richmond. In any case, I went to public schools, and the public school environment was not always welcoming. I'm being diplomatic. I've been that way for about more than half a century. I thank my brothers for insisting that I not take the commercial course and that I be enrolled in the academic course in high school. And then I went on to college to an all-girls school thanks to the scholarships I won. But as a little girl, I wasn't that little. I was overweight, very chubby, and I didn't play sports, and I was not very comfortable in social settings. I used to be quiet.
Interesting.
People find that hard to believe.
Yes.
I came up when children were to be seen and not heard. Fast forward, I finished Simmons College, and I work overseas at the American Embassy in Paris as a secretary, because when you happen to be a woman in the late 50s, early 60s, the first question they asked any woman, no matter how many degrees they had, do you know how to type? Mm. And so I must say that I realized after my first year or so in Paris that my parents had made this sacrifice to get this child through college, and I was not being challenged intellectually or any other way. However, I met someone named Mary Doherty who was going to be like my surrogate mother for the rest of my life, because my parents passed away when I was 33. But growing up in Boston as the little Elam girl, no one knew my first name. My brothers were prominent in the community. One was Senator Edward Brooks' campaign manager. The other was his law partner in the Roxbury area, and they all did pro bono work. But they helped shape this child, and I often say when I talk to students, it really does take a village, and that village was not only my family, but the members of the church that I grew up in, St. Mark Congregational Church, and the fact that some wonderful business group gave me a scholarship to spend the summer of my junior year in college in southern France. That changed my life. To hear someone say in French, La Noire comme elle est belle, the black one, how pretty she is, was awe-inspiring to this 19-year-old who didn't know what to do with her hair, much less the rest of her body, because by then I was very thin. I think it was, it's a valid question in today's concern about obesity. I walked to my junior high school, which is called middle school these days, because I was afraid to go to the bus station in Roxbury because that's where all the riots and kids would hang out. And I was such an introvert, I didn't think I could manage navigating changing buses. So I just walked about 2.5 miles each way. I sound like the old black comedian saying, you know, I walked to school in the snow and the rain. And they lived in Miami, and there was no snow. But I did walk to school. And the adolescence fat, I think, that I lost was just, it would help that for 5 days a week, I walked to and from school. I probably ate, I know I ate the wrong things, potato chips. There was something called Xarex and fruit punch. And I had an uncle who would come Thanksgiving dinner and tell me how many calories was in every spoonful I put in my mouth. To be very candid with you, I wasn't so sad when he passed on. I mean, he made Thanksgiving miserable for this 12, 13-year-old. But I did lose it by the time I was 16.
Interesting. And part of that, just an unintended benefit of walking to and from school.
Correct. Correct.
That's interesting. But I was fascinated, even as you're talking about it now, as I was reading your book, Diversifying Diplomacy, I was fascinated by the fact that I understand, I really get it when you say, hey, look, I just didn't want to go past that crowd. But still, the dedication to getting to school day in and day out, walking 5 miles round trip, that impressed me.
In Boston, where it snows in the winter.
Yes.
But I didn't. Somehow, I think my daddy or somebody must have gotten me to school. So the young folks don't need to say I'm playing the Joan of Arc role here. I wasn't that dedicated. But it did help, and there was a determination to learn. I will be very honest with you. My generation came up where you had to be a little better than the rest of your colleagues in order to be considered equal.
Yes.
I will say, and I preface this because I don't think you're of my generation. Your voice is much too young.
Okay.
Didn't have to worry once the civil rights battles had ended and you could go to any college you wanted to, and you were on the surface, and let me just say the surface, considered equal, when in fact deep down in your heart you knew there may have been other forces out there that might not be present to the human eye, but as a person of color you knew you had better perform.
Yeah, yeah. Because you even knew what it was like to be seen and not seen. And I don't mean from the perspective as it is, you know, in the black culture, you know, you're talking about really, really young people, mom and dad have company over, you've seen and not seen that. Not like that, but a racist in particular, not white people in general, but the racist in particular,
in general,
who sees the black person but doesn't see. They're so insignificant to the racist that it's almost as though they're non-existent.
That's correct. It's the kind of syndrome where someone who knows you within your office context, and you leave and you see them in the public, in the subway, in the metro, and they don't recognize
you.
Now, that doesn't happen as much now because everybody's in a car. But that was very devastating to me as a young woman growing up. I said, but I work in the office with these folks. Mm-hmm. But they're not even saying hello or goodbye or anything. That's being seen and not seen.
Yes.
What is the Ralph Ellison's The Invisible Man?
Mm-hmm. There you go. The Invisible
Man.
Yep. And in the meantime, while you're dealing with these challenges and more, as the little Elam girl who stood up for herself and at one point corrected an adult who called her that.
You're right. I just don't wear the, you know, I don't know where. I had had enough. I said, I have a name. And it's Harriet. And not realizing how powerful that was because I'd forgotten my mother had named me after Harriet Tubman.
Interesting.
And my big brother, who is since deceased, whose first name is Harry, Judge Harry Elam from Boston, Massachusetts, fourth black judge there, and then on to the Chief Justice and the Superior Court, he said to my mother after he came home from World War II, you missed me so much, as you may have seen in the book, you named her after me. I did not, she said. I named her after Harriet Tubman. So my life's work has been playing the role or conducting my own underground railroad of bringing young men and women of any color, any hue, LGBT, straight, you name it, to consider a career representing America abroad or at least living and working with a non-governmental organization abroad, to see that there are worlds beyond the confines of the United States that will give us lessons of dignity, of faith, of civility, of the recognition of the importance of hearing and listening to our elders. All of these things I learned first in Africa, but certainly in the other parts of the world, Greece, Turkey, Cyprus, France, Belgium, and the Ivory Coast.
And you, amazingly to me, really had the system. You mentioned Mary Doherty. You also talk about your brother Harry, Justin Elam, not only being judged, but also having become your surrogate father.
For 40 years.
For 40 years.
Yes.
And it's so amazing to me, this life of being mentored and mentoring that has been so much a part of who Ambassador Harriet Elam Thomas is.
You are very perceptive, and I must say that you're about the third reader who has mentioned that, and I didn't recognize that myself. I was just telling my story, but all of these people had such an impact on my life. It's the village that raised me.
That is so amazing. And your brother, I am so proud of this man I've never met before, who would take under his wings his sister. It could have been so easy for him to just say, oh, well, still, I kind of just see her as the little Elam girl,
he
too.
He had four children of his own, all of whom were, one is the vice provost at Stanford, the other is a creative writer, professor at Howard University. And one was the guru, a hip-hop artist who died in 2010. All of these children made him proud, went to Morehouse, went to Harvard, went to UCal, got PhDs, etc. I don't know where he found the time to do it, but his passing was perhaps very devastating to me because that was the father I knew most of my adult life. But I do what I can each and every day. His son looks just like him, sounds like him. I told him, do make sure you keep yourself well because I don't want you going away to any other planet
right.
yet.
Yes.
So I think that you're most receptive because I was very close to him.
And did he play a role in helping you get connected with the White House in 1968, or was that someone else?
It was my other brother, Clarence, who was Ed Brooks' campaign manager. And when Nixon was elected, I came back from Paris thinking I would probably work at the Ford Foundation. But New York City frightened me. Now, I managed to navigate the metro for 3 years in Paris from the time I was 23 or 25 to 28. And I come back to work in the Nixon White House. Let me quickly state for you and your listeners, I left before Watergate. I left in February or March of 1971. Watergate was in 72.
Yes.
So folks, I was gone. But it was an experience that any young woman would never forget, to be a young woman of color seated outside the Oval Office, between the Oval Office and the Cabinet Room. People came from around the world when Eisenhower died. The president of France is standing in front of my desk speaking English to Richard Nixon. I had lived in France for 3 years. De Gaulle never opened his mouth in English. Well, I must say, Richard Nixon didn't speak any French, but I was flabbergasted that they were communicating before they went into the Oval Office in English. Trudeau's father, Justin Trudeau's father, also came to Pierre Elliott to Eisenhower's funeral. I mean, Kissinger was in and out of my office all the time. I must say it was a heady experience for a 29-year-old, and it will stay with me. It helped me not let others intimidate me. That's
yes.
what I learned.
Well, when
they're
we
all
come
human
back,
beings. Yes.
I hear you. The common denominator is we're all human beings. When we come
Correct.
Back, Ambassador, could you share with us some of the psychological impact on the little Elam girl mustering up the courage to say, I have a name, compared to what was happening some years later at age 29, the impact that it had on you when it comes to really being able to stand up for yourself, dealing with the challenges of being, first of all, in the White House, as you mentioned, but secondly, as a black female in the White House.
With pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, our awesome guest, yours and mine, Ambassador Harriet Lee Elam Thomas, and I will be right back. Stay with us.